The Lapine City Council Special Meeting of Wednesday, December 29th, 2010 is called to order at 5:10 p.m. I apologize, everyone, for coming in late. I try my best to not do that. 5 o'clock is always a killer time to start meetings. We'll start with roll call to establish attendance and establish the quorum. Starting with City Manager, please.
Rick Allen here.
Don Graner.
Mayor Shield.
Councilor Barbara Hedges.
Councilor Douglas Ward.
Administrative Assistant Patty Morgan.
We have a new employee here, just for Sid Rivers, and she's working part-time, so this is her first day. She came at 11 today. So you guys can all meet her and learn about her. We'll talk about it another time.
Okay, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Okay, we do have staff present. We have a quorum. Councilor McAfee is absent due to illness. Okay, that moves us on to the purpose for being here, council deliberation and decision on Biogreen. Deborah?
Yes, for the record, Deborah McMahon. And as your staff, what I've done is looked at what we need to cover tonight. And what I'd like to do is go through the county's findings and decision, because what's most important in this particular application that you've called up from the county is to look at what's required for approval, denial, or approval with conditions. And when an applicant makes an application for a site plan and conditional use, there are criteria that are involved, and we have to write findings or a response, how we feel those were met or not met. And then what we typically do is take a look at each of those criteria and have a discussion, because many of the items have been discussed in testimony in your hearings. And then tonight is a time for you to discuss amongst yourselves whether you feel the criteria have been met or not. The record in this case is contained in this legal box over here, and it contains many of the items that were submitted to you in the hearings. And it's about 3/4 of the way full and has an index. And so we'll talk more about that tonight, but I just wanted to make sure that you're aware that the City of Lapine now controls the record in this matter, so all the materials are available for you to look at and review. Other issues tonight, the applicant has submitted final argument, and we'll get that passed out to you for review. But what I'd like to do at this time is just start right in on the findings and decision that the county did, so we have something to look at when we talk about the criteria. I'm going to hand this out now, if that's okay with you.
Yes. Okay.
I've got mine on my computer, so I'm going to do that there. Now, this has been sent to you before on email. It's been available to the public in a variety of ways. It was scanned into the city's archive, or the county's archives, as well as put into their paper record. The first thing you'll notice in the findings and decision is that it goes through the location, who the applicant is, who their civil engineer and attorney is, and what the request is. In this particular case, it's a conditional use permit and site plan review. There was a modification submitted, I believe, at the second hearing. It may have been the first hearing. It was December 8th. And those materials are in the record, and they clarify the position and disposition of the sound wall. Under the applicable criteria, you'll see that the county has listed those as part of Title 18 of the Deschutes County Code. On page 2, the planner starts with basic findings, and most of these are a description of the property and the surrounding land uses. If I go too fast, slow me down. On page 3 is a general description of the proposal, and then an opportunity to list in brief form the public agency comments. These are things that come from the Deschutes County Planner, the Deschutes County Traffic Engineer, as well as any other agencies. And you can see there's quite a bit of information about traffic. And when we get to that specific criteria, I will talk about that more. I'm now skimming ahead to J on page 7, which are public comments. And as you're aware, the first round of notice went out to 100 feet, and then the second notice went out to more than 1,000 feet, capturing many more home lots than before. In the conclusionary findings on page 8, you'll see that planner has looked at the traffic impact studies and described that a traffic report was prepared. And as you know through your hearings, quite a bit of evidence was given about whether that was a quality staff report, a traffic report, what staff thought about it, and then additional materials to clarify the traffic study were submitted. The conclusion was that the traffic study met all of the county's requirements and therefore met the criteria with regard to traffic impact and traffic mitigation. And there was some questions at the hearings about numbers. Those have been clarified, and the county traffic planner, traffic engineer, has agreed that the applicant's done their job. So there's no further dispute from staff on this issue. There may be from opposition, but at this point we're satisfied that that criterion's been met. Also on page 8, there's a criteria for solar. And in this particular case, the setback shown on the site plan has been met. Some of these criteria seem like they shouldn't relate to the site, but it's a requirement to address each of these. So the ones that seem less important or unusual, I won't spend much time on those. On stream control, for example, things to protect fish and wildlife, you can see that the response was there are no streams or lakes near the subject property. So that's an example of a criterion that maybe isn't as important as some others. The building code setbacks, the site plan shows that all of those setbacks will be met, and the building code in this particular case will be the current building code that the county uses. Off-street parking and loading, all of the requirements for parking have been met. The site plan shows adequate spaces for those operational issues and where those spaces will be. Outdoor lighting, the response there is that the light fixtures do not produce intensities exceeding the county's requirements, but there's a need for a condition of approval. And like many of the criterion, if the county, and in this case us, if we want to strengthen and make sure that the applicant follows certain rules, we'll make a condition of approval. And we'll have a variety of conditions of approval in this case. So when we get to the end of this document, we'll talk about what the county requested and what I think we should add to that to make a full and complete review. And then, of course, the council will need to determine how they'd like to proceed. Staff has given you an idea of what I recommend, but I want to make sure we go through this criteria first. There's a criteria about the conditional uses permitted, and you can see that in this case, electrical substations, utility facilities are listed uses, and the applicant falls within one or both of those categories. So the use is fine. We are subject to use limits, and you can see on page 10 that sewer and water requirements are required, that there are permits that must be required, and in this particular case, the applicant is going to connect and is required to connect to the Lapine Water and Sewer District systems. There's analysis of the demand, and you heard in the hearings issues about the water usage, the sewer usage, and how they're going to use those systems. So they have to connect in order to make their operation work. Compatibility is a criterion, and the specific criterion says a use that requires a lot area exceeding 9,000 square feet shall not be permitted to locate adjacent to a lot in a residential district. And the staff has noted in this particular case, this criterion only applies when the use is located on a lot adjacent to a lot in a residential district. We don't have that particular situation here. And because the platting of the property, the splitting of the property separates this use from residential areas, this criterion is not necessary because there is no home within a certain, adjacent to this particular site. When, and then the next criterion on page 11, when a use is to generate more than 30 truck trailer or other heavy equipment trips, the property shall not be permitted to locate on a lot adjacent to or across the street from a residential district. Again, this criterion only applies when the use is on a lot adjacent or across the street from a residential district, and we don't have that situation here. Number three, any use on a lot adjacent to or across the street from a lot in a residential district shall not emit odors, dust, fumes, glare, flashing lights, noise, or similar disturbances perceptible without instruments more than 200 feet in the direction of the affected residential use or lot. Again, staff notes this criterion only applies when the use is located on a lot adjacent to or across the street from a lot in a residential district. And so because we don't have that situation here, we continue on to the next criterion, but I want to remind the council that there will be plenty of discussion about noise and different permits that are required to operate the facility. The facility has received its DEQ permit, and so that's new information from the last time we met. But that's something that the applicant was able to achieve, and that resolves issues regarding whether they would get the permit or not. And in this case, they have. Storage, loading, and parking areas for uses permitted by the code shall be screened from residential zones using trees, vegetation, and topography to the maximum extent practicable to screen the area from view of nearby residents. The nearest residential zone is to the southwest across Mitts Way. Ground level storage, loading, and parking at the proposed facility will be screened by site obscuring perimeter fencing, and a detail of that is included in the record. And I'm just reading. I want to capture this succinctly without reading every word. And then the distance of the facility operations closest to the residential areas, I think, are best viewed by looking at a small site plan that I want to show you. Just to give you a short visual from an aerial view of how close residential uses are to the facility.
Is it going to be on these maps?
No.
Or no? What are you're going to show?
I think this is easier because it has distances. And this big map is fine, but what I'd like the council to look at is an aerial view north towards me. You can see the closest residences down here, and then you can see the 1,000-foot markers that these arrows point to various operational units on the site. And what I'm trying to point out is how the residential area is separated from the site plan itself. Is that clear? Well, we want to make sure you see that too.
I live there, so I know.
And you're very familiar with
it? Yeah.
Doug? And this shows distances with arrows to the chipper and the main cooling towers, etc. And then the residences are here.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to move on to page 12, and you'll remember from the applicant's presentation that there was a discussion of landscaping and the various screening mechanisms that would be used. I think it's important, at least from a staff perspective, to point out that this kind of use is occurring on industrial property. The city has industrial property located in the kind of fuchsia area right next to the dam. And this is where the city intends to have industrial development located. There's a small narrow strip to the north. But when you think about the proposed use, in this particular case, staff believes this is an appropriate area for a biomass plant. Where else would we put it? So in this particular case, the zoning makes sense, the location makes sense. Our job is to make sure that the criteria are met. But going backwards in time, is this where the city intends to have industrial development? And I think the answer is yes. Any questions about them?
I think we said yes to that in the comp plan.
Yes. And I just remembered, I kind of forgot about mentioning the history before we jumped into this, but this was a good place to bring it in. The next criteria, number 5, no use requiring air contaminant discharge permit shall be approved prior to review by the applicable state or federal reviewing authority, nor shall such uses be permitted adjacent to or across the street from a residential lot. And as I mentioned, the permits from DEQ have been received. Number 6, a property hosting a service commercial use shall be subject to a waiver of remonstrance recorded in the Deschutes County Book of Records, declaring that the operator and his or her successors will not now or in the future file a complaint aimed at curtailing industrial activities on adjacent properties conducted in conformance with the county code. The proposed use is industrial, not service commercial, therefore that criterion does not apply. Exhaust stacks, now moving on to the next criterion, number 7. Exhaust stacks shall be screened from residential zones using trees, veg, and topography to the maximum extent practicable to screen the stack from view of nearby residences. And because the stack will meet DEQ air quality permit requirements and does not exceed the permit height requirement of 150 feet in height, we find that the screening that's proposed and the height of the stacks meets this criterion because the applicant is going to use trees, vegetation, and topography to the maximum extent practicable to help screen those stacks. Now, you remember on the site plan that there's a 150-foot cell tower kitty-corner to this property, and the stacks are less than that in height. Under C1, traffic and parking, a use that generates more than 20 auto or truck trips during the busiest hour of the day to and from the premises shall be served directly by an arterial collector, In this particular case, Reed Road serves that function, so that criterion's been met. An applicant must, before I move on, I want to point out that the county felt it necessary, and I think we do too, to require improvements to roads that are going to be used. And in this case, Reed Road is one of those roads, and you'll see in the proposed conditions of approval that Reed Road is required to be improved, and I'll go through those details later. An applicant must demonstrate that affected transportation facilities are adequate to serve the proposed use, considering the functional classification capacity and the level of service of such facilities. The traffic study or traffic report in this particular case was reviewed by the county professional engineers and found to be within all the requirements that the county requires. It does not require or trip a threshold that requires improvement to Reed and First. And this has always been a subject that's generated a lot of discussion, but in the planning world, we are required to look for connections to our mitigation requirements. And in this particular case, we can't make that connection because the threshold for capacity at that intersection hasn't been met. Once that's tripped, then the city or county can make conditions of approval for incremental or full improvements to that intersection. But for this application, we don't have that situation because the trips on that intersection are quite low. Parking demand, that particular criterion, all of that will be accommodated on the property. No on-street parking is proposed. And of course, for site plans, we want people to put their parking on their own property. Number 4, there shall be only one ingress and egress from properties accommodating uses by the code per each 300 feet or fraction thereof street frontage. If necessary to meet this requirement, uses shall provide for shared ingress or egress. The property has approximately 591 feet of frontage along Reed Road and a similar frontage along Foss Road. So you're looking at a street frontage of 1,182 feet. The applicant's proposing one ingress and egress to Reed Road for the truck service road and a second access to Foss Road for small vehicles frequenting the boiler turbine complex. So in this particular case, this criterion is met. Under D, which is an extensive criterion, with the requirements for large-scale uses. And the county staff has determined that these criteria do not apply, and we agree with that. Under additional requirements, if there's a need for us to make conditions of approval, which we will do in this case, and I feel would be appropriate, of course it's up to the council to agree with me, but we expect to have conditions of approval. It's very rare for a site plan and conditional use not to have conditions of approval. And a conditional use requires some sort of monitoring because it is conditional, then there are special conditions that do apply. So it's not surprising to have conditions of approval. Under the dimensional standards for lot size, no new lots will be created, and this criterion does not apply. Lot coverage, they meet the requirements. There's no issue there. Setbacks, and we've talked about this in the public hearings, all the setbacks are met. And that includes criterion 2 and 3 regarding setbacks. Under building heights and the use, for this utility facility, the tallest of the buildings is at a preliminary height of 76 feet and will not exceed the exception height limit of 100 feet. The next criterion, the structure is located on a lot that's not adjacent to a residential district, similar to what we talked about before. The subject property is across the street from the areas you saw earlier on that map. We've talked about height, and staff believes the structure is the minimum height necessary to accommodate the machinery and equipment. Under Roman numeral 3, the structure is equipped with fire sprinkler protection, and that will come through the implementation of the Oregon Specialty Code, Structural Specialty Code, typically what we've called the Building Code. The structure is at least 500 feet from the nearest residential district is the next criterion under Roman numeral 4, and the proposed structures will be more than 700 feet from the nearest residential district. Moving on, the utility exhaust stack shall meet DEQ air quality permit requirements and not exceed 150 feet in height. The permit was approved, and as we've talked about earlier, the stacks do not exceed 150 feet. Minimum lot frontage, that criterion does not apply because no new lots are being created. Did we lock it, somebody else?
Oh, no.
Okay. Under the side yards, we don't have a requirement here because the property is not adjacent to zone forest land and all the other setbacks are met. Under the rear yard, it's not adjacent to forest land and therefore we don't need to meet that requirement. Clear vision areas, this has to do with the visual distance required at corners. And there are requirements, as you can see there, and we will require that those be maintained so nothing gets put into those areas. And at this time, the site plan does not show any impact to any of the clear vision areas. Off-street parking and loading, the county has put in this document the criteria required for compliance. And all of the parking requirements have been met for this size of building. The same is with the loading berth. And we will require in the conditions of approval, and this is fairly typical, that what the applicant has submitted on their site plan, they must conform to that unless we've modified it in any particular way. The same with loading spaces. And that criterion does not apply for that particular use. Otherwise, all the off-street parking areas have been met. I want to make sure I don't skip anything here. Uh, Under page 20, there's a discussion criterion about lighting used to illuminate off-street parking areas. And of course, we want all lighting to be directed down so that glare does not go onto any of the property. And that's a typical criterion you'll see for conditional use permits. So you see this come up in a variety of ways. And the applicant does not adjoin a residential use, so this code requirement does not apply to the review of the application, but will still require that lighting be pointed down and shielded so that it does not create glare. Parking areas have been located and designed to avoid the need to back vehicles into a street right-of-way. That's very important. And then letter C, regarding dust control measures and how to mitigate those, the county found that part of the subject property will be paved for frequent vehicular use. Those areas include an access road to the powerhouse facility, the parking area near the powerhouse, the truck dump maneuvering area. Any areas for fuel storage and handling will be surfaced with 8 inches of compacted crushed aggregate. And there are various measures proposed that will control dust. One of the issues that came up, and we heard from the public on this, was the use of Darlene Way and how that was a dusty road. At this particular point in time, staff is recommending that the applicant not use Darlene Way until they've obtained a permit from BLM, and BLM regulates that road. So at this point in time, we would not be allowing Darlene Way to be used for truck travel, and that would minimize quite a bit of the dust issue that was brought up earlier in the discussion. Access aisles shall be of sufficient width for all vehicular turning and maneuvering, and that criterion is met. And we know that's met because we look at the site plan and we measure different perimeters, and we can see that there's adequate space for on-site maneuvering. Service drives. We've talked about the access points before. And the proposed truck service drive will access Reed Road. Small vehicles will access Foss Road. We have more criterion about service drives, and those criterion regarding points 30 feet from the intersection have been met. Parking spaces along the outer boundaries of a parking area shall be contained by curb or bumper rail, prevent motor vehicles from extending over an adjacent property line or street right-of-way. And in this particular case on the site plan, you've seen that no parking spaces are proposed in locations where vehicles could do that. The fencing helps remove that possibility as well. Off-street parking design, there are specific bay widths and templates for parking, and all of those have been met by the applicant. Same with bicycle parking, and you can see there are extensive criteria for those 21 spaces that are proposed for vehicle parking, which I believe was modified in the modification. 21 vehicle spaces plus 5 bicycle parking spaces were proposed, and that meets the requirements. I'm going to skip through the rest of the bicycle criterion because they've met everything except for the specified location for unsheltered bike racks. And as a condition of approval, they need to submit a revised plot plan showing that if they haven't already. And I'll need to look at that just one more time. The same with the next criterion requiring bicycle parking that is located outdoors to be within 50 feet of main entrances. And we will make that a condition of approval if it has not been submitted already. I'm going to skip B and C because, again, we've talked about meeting the requirements or making a condition of approval. Under number 4 on page 24, the surface of outdoor parking facility shall be surfaced in the same manner as the vehicle parking area or with a minimum of 1-inch thickness of aggregate material. The surface shall be maintained in a smooth, durable, and well-drained condition. And we'll ask for that condition of approval to be met, but what we've seen on the site plan is that there is extensive paving for the purposes that they've proposed, and I see no problem with that. Under security and bicycle parking facilities, we will have additional information in the form of a condition of approval to make sure that particular criterion is met. The same with lighting. And I'm going to move on to, we've already discussed bicycle parking in general, so bicycle commuter facilities. The utility facility is not a commercial or public building, so those criteria do not apply. Under site plan review, and site plan review is probably the more important when you look at the site plan itself, is to make sure all the setbacks are met and we know what's happening on the property. So in this particular case, the site plan elements must include the layout and design of the existing and proposed improvements. And there's a list of all those things that must be there. And we find that the section that is submitted by the applicant shows all of the things that are going to be proposed on the site. So those criterion that follow include, does the proposed development relate harmoniously to the natural environment and existing development, minimizing visual impacts and preserving natural features, including views and topographical features. When we talk about harmonious development, we have to remember where this property is. It's in our industrial zone. And so in that particular case, we look at surrounding uses, and in the findings that have been submitted so far, the natural environment includes scenic views of the Palena Mountains from the west of the proposed facility, and views of the Cascade Mountains from the east of the facility. No special natural features or topographical features exist on the subject property. It's generally flat. Staff finds that the screening requirements are sufficient to minimize visual impacts for the lower portions of the facility. The stacks themselves, they will be visible, but that's what's intended in the zone. So staff doesn't find that what has been proposed is out of sync with what should be done to screen this particular facility as best as you can. And there's some discussion there that those measures are sufficient to minimize visual impacts of the development. Again, it's an industrial use with the fencing, the berm, the trees, and the other screening, the colors, all of that meets the requirements of the code. Landscape and existing topography shall be preserved to the greatest extent possible, considering development constraints and suitability of the landscape and topography. Preserved trees and shrubs shall be protected. Where there's existing vegetation and landscape materials within the required setbacks, the proposal says that they will do their best to preserve those, and that's a reasonable thing for this particular project. Otherwise, the majority of the property, as you see on the site plan, is going to be developed. And you can see the site plan here, and you can see that there's development on the majority of the property, and then the fence and the screening will be on the perimeter. The site plan shall be designed to provide a safe environment while offering appropriate opportunities for privacy and transition from the public to private spaces. We feel the site plan has been designed appropriately, and in our hearings, we have talked about that, as well as the applicant making a presentation pointing out on the site plan where things are going to be located and operated. And then you'll remember that there was a video that gave you a bird's eye view all the way around the property, and that's included in the record in case you need to reference that further. So that criterion has been met. D, where appropriate, the site plan shall provide for the special needs of handicapped persons, such as ramps for wheelchairs and braille signs. These will be requirements that are usually implemented by the building code, but we will reference that in the conditions of approval. The location and number of points of access to the site, interior circulation, separations from pedestrians and moving and parked vehicles, and the arrangement of parked areas in relation to buildings and structures shall be harmonious with the proposed and neighboring buildings and structures. And I'll tell you, it's no fun reading all this stuff. But it's really important to make sure that we discuss each criterion. And we can't do that without me stating it. Otherwise, the public doesn't know that we've looked at it and considered it and have it available for discussion. So with this particular criterion, the application does meet those requirements, And it's a subjective call on whether you feel it's harmonious or not. In this particular case, we've heard from the applicant about the screening, the placement on the side of the different components of the facility, and how it makes sense for this particular operation. And staff feels that they've done a very good job in terms of showing where on the site plan things are going to occur and how those either blend with the other industrial areas or are screened as much as practicable. So we feel that criterion has been met. With regard to surface drainage systems, they shall be designed to prevent adverse impacts on neighboring properties, streets, or surface and subsurface water quality. And in this particular case, stormwater will be directed to bioretention ponds located on the perimeters of the facility and within the required setbacks and landscape areas. And you will see there's additional findings there describing the details of how those operate. And in this particular case, the requirements have been met. The next criterion talks about area structures and facilities for storage, machinery and equipment services, and they're listed there for you. Loading and parking and similar accessory structures shall be designed, located, and buffered and screened to minimize adverse impacts on the site and neighboring properties. The key word there is minimize adverse impacts. We know in an industrial area there could be impacts, but it's not our requirement to make them completely go away. We're required to minimize them or find ways to screen them or reduce them. And in this particular case, the proposed facility is screened and has other accommodations that meet the criteria. We will make a condition of approval to make that more definite. All above ground utility installations shall be located to minimize adverse visual impacts on the site and neighboring properties. This particular criterion applies to above ground utility lines. And we find that the screening methods required above will also, and that's in the criteria on the top of page 28, will also serve to minimize any adverse visual impacts from utility lines on the site and neighboring properties. The next criterion talks about specific criteria which are outlined for each zone and shall be required to be part of the site plan. And specific zoning standards for the site have been addressed above. So we're not going to go into detail there, but things like setbacks, percentage of coverage, landscaping required, all of those have been met by the applicant. All exterior lighting shall be shielded so that direct light does not project off-site. We just talked about that, so we'll have a condition of approval that will ensure compliance with this criterion. Under the minimum required standards, you can see that landscape areas, minimum of 15%, shall be landscaped. And the calculations that you see below show that that criterion has been met. All areas subject to the final site plan and not otherwise improved shall be landscaped. And as a condition of approval, we will require that criterion to be met. In addition to the other requirements of the county code, the landscaping requirements shall apply to parking and loading areas. And there's criterion there, and the applicant will be required to meet that condition. And in this particular case, we will have that as a condition of approval. In addition to the landscaping, you can see that the code requires the parking and loading area to be separated from a lot line adjacent to a roadway by a landscape strip, 10 feet in width at least, and from any other lot line by a landscape strip. By a landscape strip at least 5 feet in width. And then you'll see detailed criterion down below. And because the parking facilities will not be adjacent to a public roadway, we don't have to apply that criterion. Landscaping in a parking or loading area shall be located in a defined landscaping area, which are uniformly distributed through the parking or loading area. And on the site plan, you'll see how the landscaping is laid out, and as a condition of approval, we will strengthen that particular requirement with the condition of approval, showing that all of the requirements can be met. And on this particular site, I don't see any difficulty in making conditions of approval to meet that criterion. The landscaping in a parking area shall have a width of not less than 5 feet. And you'll see the other requirements for making sure that planted areas are watered and cared for. And you'll see that a condition of approval will be created to make sure that that continues on. And this is one of the things we talked about in the comp plan, that in order to reduce our code enforcement requirements, that we needed strong conditions of approval to make sure that people maintain their landscaping. And we'll do that here. Non-motorized access. With regard to the bicycle parking, the development shall provide the number and type of bicycle parking facilities as required in the code. The location and design of the facility shall be indicated on the site plan. And in this particular case, we have information about that, but we will have a condition of approval to make sure that we have all of the requirements met. And again, on this site, it's not difficult to do that for bicycle parking. Under the conditional use criteria, and these are the ones that are more subjective, except for those conditional uses permitting individual single-family dwellings, conditional uses shall comply with the following standards. In addition to the standards of the zone in which the conditional use is located and any other applicable standards of the chapter. So the site under consideration shall be determined to be suitable for the proposed use based on the following factors. And in this particular case, we have to ask ourselves whether these questions have been met. The site design and operating characteristics of the use. So we have to describe what's going on. And in this particular case, staff finds that the generally level, large, industrially zoned property is a suitable site for the utility facility based on the site design and operating characteristics of the use, as presented in the application materials and through our hearings and other submissions to the record. The adequacy of transportation access to the site. In this particular case, we've talked about the traffic report that was submitted, the county's expert analysis of that report, and in that particular case, all of the traffic requirements have been met. There is mitigation required because of the impacts that the application does present. And in this particular case, the county staff, and in this case, I believe the city staff would agree that the applicant will be required to improve Reed Road to the standards listed in Title 17 Table A for a collector road. This will require widening of the existing pavement to a width of 18 feet from centerline along the frontage of the applicant's property. Sidewalk shall be installed as specified as a condition of approval for the partition that was filed under MP 10-6. Drainage swales will be required along the frontage of the property. The applicant will also be required to improve Foss Road to the standards listed in Title 17 Table A for commercial local roads. This will require widening of the existing pavement to a width of 16 feet from center line along the frontage of the applicant's property. Sidewalks and drainage swales will be required along the frontage of the property. So those are conditions of approval related to street improvements and the construction of sidewalks and drainage swales. The next criterion describes how the natural and physical features of the site, including but not limited to general topography, natural hazards, and natural resource values. So this criterion requires us to look at those things. And in this particular case, the site is suitable for the proposed use. There really are no topographic constraints or identified natural hazards on the site. No special natural resource values have been identified on the site that would render the site unsuitable for the proposed use. And as we discussed before, this, according to staff and our belief, that this is the proper place for this kind of utility facility. The proposed use shall be compatible with the existing and projected uses on surrounding properties based on the factors listed in the county code under 18.128.015A. I'm going to run through those briefly. I don't think they differ than what you've heard before, but I want to make sure that we talk about those. And I've got that here. The general standards governing conditional uses under 18.128.015 are as follows. The site under consideration shall be determined to be suitable for the proposed use based on the following factors. Site design and operating characteristics of the use, adequacy of transportation access, and as I mentioned before, the natural and physical features of the site, including but not limited to general topography, etc. Then there's second criteria under B of the same section, that the proposed use shall be compatible with existing and projected uses on surrounding properties, and that these standards may be met by the imposition of conditions calculated to ensure that the standard will be met. So as we go through the findings on page 32, which if the council determines we need to strengthen, in this particular case, I think there are some findings that we can add to this. I believe that this criterion will be met. And you'll see extensive discussion about the issues under this section that relate to noise. And you'll remember in testimony and in the hearings and in the material submitted to you, there was a dispute amongst the experts. And in this particular case, staff has looked at the materials that were submitted as persuaded by applicants, noise experts, because they are certified experts, whereas opponents' experts really didn't have the same qualifications. And so we felt more persuaded by the applicant's submission that the noise levels can be met, were properly tested, and that they will not exceed the state requirements for noise levels. Now, how do we make sure that that is met through the lifetime of this project? Well, because it's a conditional use permit and we're going to have conditions of approval, we'll need a condition of approval that requires regular monitoring and testing. It's important to make sure that those noise levels aren't exceeded, and we can't do that without requiring the applicant to submit evidence that they have been meeting those requirements. So we'll need to have some discussion tonight on what you think is best. Is yearly testing best? Is there testing variations that should occur? And that's something we should discuss, because it was one of the key issues that came up during the hearings. I believe we've discussed traffic. At this point, I don't have anything more to add on traffic, mainly because we feel the applicant has met all their requirements, the county concurs, and we haven't seen any evidence to the contrary that would persuade us that the criteria haven't been met. Under radio, television tower, or utility station or substation, there are certain requirements. And in a residential zone, all equipment storage on the site may be required to be within an enclosed building. Again, this is one of those criteria that doesn't apply to us. So this criterion does not apply, but we still have to state it. The use may be required to be fenced and landscaped. And as we've talked about before and what you've heard in the hearings, yes, this site will be fenced and landscaped and meets all of those requirements. They are not seeking a waiver to any of those issues related to minimum lot size. Transmission towers, posts, overhead wires, pumping stations, and similar installations shall be located, designed, and installed to minimize conflicts with scenic values. In this particular case, we've talked about the scenic views of the Palinas and the Cascade Mountains. We're placing this particular operation in the proper zone, and there will be screening to the greatest extent possible for this particular operation. The proposed boiler turbine building will be painted a desert forest green color to blend with the slopes of the Palina Peak. So the applicant has made considerable screening efforts and has really taken a look at what's required in this particular case. Now, as you know, this is a big operation. You can't screen everything. And in an industrial zone, we don't expect that everything be screened, because this is where these operations are likely to occur. On page 35, the county has recommended approval subject to the following conditions of approval. And you'll see under conditions of approval, specifically under A, approval of this conditional use permit and site plan is based on the application, the site plan, and supporting documentation is submitted and as revised through the hearings process. Any substantial change to the proposal will require a new permit. Councilor Adele McAfee wrote in earlier today that she supports the proposal, but she's concerned how to handle any changes that might occur. And I'd like to read her specific email. She said she couldn't be here. I'm most concerned about the traffic issue. Considering the evidence presented at the hearing, I feel BioGreen traffic analysis was comprehensive and there was no compelling evidence to dispute its claims. However, projections are not an exact science, and it would be prudent to put some mechanism in place if it was found that the additional traffic trips on 1st and 97 or on Darlene caused any public safety issues. Keeping in mind, BioGreen has always presented themselves as motivated to be a good neighbor, that the mechanism be in a proportionate share, that this mechanism does not cause an unfunded liability to the project. I've attended all the meetings, and I have assimilated all the materials provided to the council through the application and hearings process, and I strongly feel that the council should accept the modifications as presented and direct staff to move forward in findings for approval of the BioGreen application, Adele McAfee. In this particular case, when you take a look at the condition of approval, if there's any substantial change that requires a new permit, the new impacts will be assessed. That's a good condition to get at what Adele is talking about. Now, she's not aware on Darlene, of course, that we will recommend that that not be used for truck traffic until the BOM permit is obtained. But in this particular case, she's asking that some mechanism be put in place, quote, if it was found that additional traffic trips caused any public safety issues. The best way to do that is require the condition of approval that requires any substantial change to the proposal must submit a new permit, and then we review again to see what the new impacts are. The second condition of approval says the applicant shall comply with the requirements of the County Building Safety Division of the Community Development Department. We don't have our own building department, so this is a reasonable request. It's the only way they can get their building permits. Plat implementing the partition approved under County File MP10 shall be recorded prior to the issuance of building permits. I believe that has been done. If it hasn't been done, we'll keep that condition in there. The applicant shall provide Deschutes County with a DEQ approved air contaminant discharge permit prior to issuance of building permits. That has been submitted, so we can check that off. But we may want to consider making sure that they comply with that permit and make sure that the state of Oregon is in the loop here. And I believe they are. They issued the permit. They're going to manage that permit. But we may want to consider a condition of approval. And if you direct me to create findings, I can work on that particular issue. The utility facility exhaust stack shall meet DEQ air quality permit requirements and shall not exceed the height of 150 feet. Or not exceed 150 feet in height, whichever is less. We've talked about that before. That is a reasonable condition, and we should keep that in there. The applicant shall plant or transplant a minimum of 220 trees. 40% of the trees will be ponderosa or lodgepole pine that are 5 to 6 feet tall. 40% of the trees shall be Austrian or Scotch pine that are 5 to 6 feet tall. And 20% of the trees shall be aspen that have a trunk caliper of 1.5 to 2 inches. These trees shall be planted along the south, west, and north property lines in the locations indicated in the site plan sheet prior to issuance of occupancy permits or initiation of use, whichever comes first. That is a huge number of trees to plant, but it's appropriate because of the conditional use criteria that requires us to be in harmony with the area and to buffer things. So in this particular case, this condition of approval is appropriate, and it's consistent with council's direction to make sure that such trees are installed prior to the issuance of occupancy permits or use. At all times, the required landscaping shall be continuously maintained and kept alive and attractive. Again, consistent with council direction. All vehicle travel services shall be maintained in a manner which will not create dust problems for neighboring properties. That makes sense. That was an issue in our hearings, and this is a good condition to deal with that. Prior to issuance of an occupancy permit, the applicant will be required to improve Reed Road, as we've described before, to the standards listed, as we've described before. And that also applies to Foss Road, which you'll see described in Condition J. At all times, the applicant shall comply with the relevant DEQ noise standards under OAR 340-35-0035. This is probably an issue that came up quite a bit. This is an issue that came up quite a bit in the hearings and in submitted testimony, so we'll need to talk about that a bit. And if you so direct, I believe we should strengthen that with some monitoring requirements. And we'll need to talk about what's appropriate there. Prior to the issuance of building permits, the applicant shall submit a noise study prepared by a professional engineer documenting the plant combined with any noise mitigation can comply with the Oregon requirements, and they have done so. And that is in the record, and you've seen that through the submissions. All structures greater than 45 feet in height shall be equipped with fire sprinkler protection systems, and that's a requirement of the specialty code, and you will see that under the fire protection codes as well. Those are all implemented by the county through their building department. Prior to issuance of the building permits, the applicant shall provide Deschutes County with a letter from TransCanada documenting that the proposed facility and associated truck routes have permission to use TransCanada's right-of-way and or pipeline crossings have been properly constructed. And if you remember from the submissions, we did receive that. All lighting shall comply with the Deschutes County Code for Lighting. And that is a good condition. I would probably strengthen that to have some description that all lights must be shielded and directed down. It's important to make that clear so that when the public reads this, they know that, that's something we're sensitive to. We've been talking about that in the zoning ordinance meetings, and it's something we should strengthen in this particular case. All areas subject to the final site plan and not otherwise improved will be landscaped. And in this particular case, that is something we've talked about on the site plan, and we'll cover any missing areas through this condition of approval. We're going to ask the applicant to submit a revised plot plan if necessary, showing all of the landscaped areas and making sure that all of the criterion for landscaping have been met. It's my understanding that this is not a problem. When we look at the site, we can see that there are adequate spaces for landscaping, and it looks like they've done a very good job to show us where those things will go. Again, in the next condition of approval, we need to have more information on bicycle parking, and I'm not going to read all those because we've done that before, but that's typical. We just want to make sure all of the requirements are met, and if there are details that need to be pointed out in a particular way that we don't have data on, this condition will cover it. Under condition 9, we're asking that the surface of the outdoor parking facility be surfaced in the same manner as the motor vehicle parking areas, and this is a condition of approval that we talked about earlier. We want that paved surface to be maintained in a smooth, durable, and well-drained condition. And then under 10, we're back to bicycle issues for lockable enclosures. We'll ask the bike racks, lockers, or other facilities be permanently anchored to the surface of the ground or to the structure. And there are specific styles of bike racks, and we'll have the applicant meet those requirements. We're also asking that the bike parking area be thoroughly illuminated and visible from adjacent sidewalks or motor vehicle parking areas. When we discuss some of these conditions later on, I have some things to add, but for now, the duration of the approval, which is the last piece of information on page 37, gives the applicant 2 years to submit an application for a building permit. That's pretty typical. The county does that frequently. That's not unusual. And in this particular case, we know from the applicant that they want to get started and that they do have a timeline they'd like to meet. With that, I'd like to just go over two things. Hang on a second, I want to get to... Give me a chance to...
That document's done, so you can all rest a minute.
Well, we're not quite done.
No, with this document. I'm just saying, you've gotten to the last page.
Yeah,
all
we're
done
reading.
Done with that.
So, I feel there are certain questions that we need to answer. And question number one is, should the council accept the current county decision with its conditions of approval? Have the legal criteria been met? Number two, should you accept the current county decision of approval and modify the conditions of approval to reflect refinements and key issues as discussed in the hearings? Have the legal criteria been met? Should you deny the application? Have the legal criteria not been met? And again, we talk a lot about criteria because that's what you have to use to determine whether this application should go forward. From a staff perspective, and after review of the opponent's appeal testimony and any other submissions, the staff is not persuaded that the BioGreen application requires denial. In fact, we believe that the BioGreen application includes a good job in presenting its case and why it should be approved, issues related to traffic impact, noise, emissions, operations, and screening have been thoroughly explained and supported by the submission of evidence by BioGreen's experts. Based on the hearing's testimony and record developed to date, staff's recommendation is to modify the county decision of approval and refine the conditions of approval to include the following items. Require testing of the BioGreen noise levels on a regular basis to assure that the operation is within DEQ requirements. Approve the modification requested by BioGreen because it more accurately depicts the site plan, including the sound wall. Restrict BioGreen's truck traffic from using Darlene Way until a BLM permit has been obtained. Require continuing review of any approved conditional use permits to assure that all conditions are met. And as you're aware, the DEQ permit was approved and is in the record. Require that any other substantive changes to the operation of the site will require a new permit, same as the county, addresses Adele's concern. And then any other conditions or requirements we feel are needed to make sure the criteria have been met. Typically in these types of matters, the council could reach a conclusion, whether it be for approval of with conditions or a denial. Then you as council would direct me as staff to prepare findings to support your decision. This is really important because the findings are what are essentially a legal foundation for why you've made your decision, whatever that decision may be. And typically in these cases, you'll make a decision of how you want to proceed and then send me away to make those findings, to strengthen what the county's done, to make sure that if this application is appealed to LUBA, and we believe it may be appealed to LUBA, that we do our best efforts now so we can reduce the impact of any LUBA appeal and any cost to the city. So it's absolutely essential that the findings are as solid as possible. The findings will explain why approval or denial is warranted. The findings will also explain why you are not biased or have conflicts of approval, in this particular matter. Once the findings are prepared, the decision is signed by the mayor and the decision issued to the parties. And in this particular case, it's time for you to discuss amongst yourselves how you would like to proceed, if you need more time to read materials. The applicant has submitted final argument, and it's consistent with what we have discussed before. It strengthens the applicant's presentation, I believe, and addresses key issues. I'd like to hand that out at this time. There's a cover letter on top for each of you, and proposed findings and decision submitted by the applicant, which you will see include strengthened findings and conditions of approval, and I'll just let you move those forward. If you have an extra one, I'll need one for the record, I'm sorry.
I guess we could do it.
Yeah.
I need one of those.
Yeah. Kitty, will you hand me one of those too? I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay, findings and decisions.
Cover letter.
You got this?
Yeah.
Thank you. once you have this, I think it's important to take a look at page 70 of the document that's just been handed out. And you will see it is a fresher approach to conditions of approval, if that's how the council would like to proceed. And on page 70. And you'll see conditions of approval about use and operation of the facility that go into greater detail.
Okay.
And you should take a moment and run through those conditions. They're very similar. Some are bolstered as compared to what we just looked at and talked about with the council's decision. I think the most important thing to focus on when you're ready is under L, how compliance with DEQ's noise standards can be met. So take a moment to look through those, and then when you're ready, I think we need to talk for the benefit of the public about condition L. While you're reading, I want to point out the difference in length of the two documents. The county's decision with its findings is 37 pages. In this particular case, the applicant's findings and proposed conditions of approval are 73 pages, much more extensive and in greater detail. And they address quite a few of the issues that were brought up in the hearings and through written testimony. And that's the main reason for the difference. It better supports the application.
Thank you.
I'm looking over your shoulder now because I didn't keep on to myself.
Madam Mayor, at this time, what I'd like to do is point your direction, or ask you to look at page 71 and condition L. And it reads as follows. At all times, the applicant shall comply with relevant DEQ noise standards under OAR 340-350035. That is a key condition of approval because it gives us the authority to say, hey, you must meet these requirements. But how do you do that? How do you continue to make sure that these noise requirements are met? If you go to the next condition, you'll see that prior to operating the plant, the applicant shall hire an Oregon licensed professional engineer with experience in sound testing to A, test ambient sound levels at the location specified by the Oregon Administrative Rule. When the plant is not in operation for the residential property closest to the plant and for the first two residential properties south of that property on Woods Way, and conduct sound testing in the same locations once the plant is in full operation, and determine if the standards of Table 8 of the Oregon Administrative Rule 340-350035 are exceeded, and determine whether the BioGreen plant violates the 10 dBA increased standards of the same rule, if applicable. In the event that the testing must occur on private property and permission to test is denied, the engineer may test sound on the property line in the alternate location specified by the rule, meaning the property line. In that case, the engineer shall provide an analysis of whether the change in location impacts measured noise levels, and the approximate level of impact due to a change in proximity to other ambient noise sources, such as Highway 97. In the event if the engineer determines the DEQ noise standards are exceeded by plant operations, BioGreen may adjust its operations or improve soundproofing at the plant or site to achieve compliance with DEQ standards, or seek approval from the City of Alpine of mitigating measures determined by the professional engineer to allow the plant to comply with those DEQ standards. If the plant is shown to comply with standards as constructed, or if option A is selected, BioGreen's engineer shall retest noise levels until measures adequate to achieve required noise levels have been installed, or submit proof to the City of Alpine of compliance with DEQ noise standards. If option B is selected, the mitigation plan shall be filed with the City of Alpine for its review. In either case, the City of Alpine shall conduct a review of the test results or the mitigation plan to determine whether the submitted document demonstrates compliance with the rule. The review shall be a land use review subject to the then applicable land use review procedures of the City of Alpine, with at a minimum notice and an opportunity to obtain a hearing initially or on appeal. The scope of the review will be to determine whether the submitted evidence demonstrates compliance by the BioGreen plant with the applicable provisions of OAR 340-035-0035. The city may approve conditions of approval on its approval of a mitigation plan or test results if needed to assure compliance with the rule. The applicant shall provide testing results and analysis information to the City of Alpine no later than 6 months after plant operations have commenced. This is an important condition of approval because it gets at the nature of what has been a pivotal issue here, and that is, can we control noise and meet the state's requirements? This assures that that occurs and requires the testing necessary to make sure that at the time the plant starts up, there is evidence of what the noise really is and has it been mitigated. And unless you feel differently, this condition meets what I would consider appropriate requirements to make sure that the intent of the site plan and the conditional use permit have been met. I think you should discuss this and feel whether this condition of approval meets your requirements through the background you have on this particular issue. And it's an important condition of approval. The other conditions of approval are all appropriate, and I don't see anything else that requires additional discussion. It's very consistent with what we've talked about in the county approval, and as you know, the findings are more extensive. So, would you like to talk about noise? I'd like to hear some noise on noise.
Do you want anybody to start?
Please, kids.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just saying, yeah, anybody.
I agree that this is a good plan to test periodically. And I also feel that sometimes low noise is more disturbing than a clank occasionally. Some kind of a hum that I have lived by places that had that, and it's, when can it stop? So I think that should also be considered, not only the decimal level, but the lower levels of it also.
Is that taken into consideration in their studies, or do you know?
I don't know. I know what's required is to meet the OAR requirements for noise at a certain dBA, which is the decibel level.
44, I believe.
Yeah. And no more than a 10%, 10 dBA increase. One of the things that we want to make sure we do is be consistent with the Oregon rules, but I could certainly look that up for you to see if lower levels are part of that. I don't have an answer for you on that.
Okay.
Pardon me, as this property develops around BioGreen, and hopefully that's what we want in the city, is to increase the use of our industrial area, isn't that going to other areas close to that plant, isn't that going to absorb part of the sound coming from the plant?
It can.
And that's going, that would mean that it would make a difference, say a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, when there might be two or three other businesses there, which would, in my, I would think, would help BioGreen reduce their noise level.
And if you remember from testimony from both experts, what's important to realize as a baseline is what they call ambient noise, what's existing today and compared to that. As the industrial area develops, it's likely that that ambient noise could increase. And so that baseline will be taken into consideration.
In the under M, 1, 2, 3, in the third paragraph, B, okay, event engineer determines DEQ noise standards are exceeded by the plant operations, BioGreen may A, adjust operations plant level, or B, seek approval from the City of Lapine of mitigation measures determined by the professional engineer to allow the plant to comply with DEQ standards. Would that be like creating new standards, or?
It would create mitigation measures. So we would be presented with, here's a measure for us to control our noise, and we want you to consider it. So again, if there's a change, or if there's something that doesn't fall into the noise requirements, there would be a presentation to you, and an application, mm-hmm. saying, here's our mitigation measure, and we'd like the City Council to approve it or not. And that's what B is talking about. Seek approval from the city of mitigation measures determined by the professional engineer to allow the plant to comply with DEQ standards. We don't know what those would be.
Okay.
But again, the DEQ standard is what's required to be met. And there may be various ways in the future of dealing with that.
Okay.
Is there anything to compare that to? Like, are there any places in Lapine that have a decibel level
similar to this?
Yeah.
I don't know. What's important here is that they start off with the baseline and then make sure that the DEQ and the state requirements are met for this particular site. Now, ambient noise, I'm not an expert, but ambient noise is the noise around us, what's existing there in various times throughout the day or the month or the year. In this particular case, they've done testing to establish that and to show that their projection is they're going to meet the state standards. For other places in Lapine, we do not have data whether it's identical or similar to this. But in our industrial area, again, this is where we anticipate industrial development. In other places, for example, along the highway where there's a lot of ambient noise, or in commercial areas where you've got a lot of traffic, you might have different levels. It would be typical to have different levels.
Would it be out of line to stipulate in there that testing for noise levels be carried out on a semi-annual basis, something like that, or would that cause an undue expense to the applicant?
Let's see, hang on.
Providing us with information, the council's information.
Yeah, I want to read again when this occurs. So A, when the plant is not in operation, there will be testing, again, to establish those ambient or base levels. And then they are going to conduct sound testing once the plant's in full operation. So before and as soon as they're in operation, that will occur. And then what you're suggesting, Don, is that there be some sort of regular testing to determine whether they're in compliance.
In compliance.
Staying in compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon?
Staying in compliance.
Yes, so that they're constantly in compliance.
And your suggestion is, what was it?
Either semi-annually or annually, one of the two, but I think it should be on a specific time period.
And what would the council like to do? I need to hear from all of you on this, on whether you'd like semi-annual, which has been suggested by Don, or annual testing. And keep in mind that at any time the noise levels are exceeded, that there's evidence to show that, they have to come back into compliance, so there may be other ways of testing as well.
Well, another part of Don's question was what kind of, or would there be a financial hardship? Do we know what it costs for this testing? That might help us in that.
No, but there is a cost, and it is an impact upon the development. I don't know specifically what the cost would be, but, you know, there's definitely a cost to hire experts. But you as a council have to feel comfortable that this condition does what you want it to do. Yes, Don? Oh, sorry, Doug.
You forgot me already, huh? Thank you very much. Well, first off, this is an industrial site. It's not a no-noise area. And this is a 24-hour operation. We have to be aware that whatever noise you make is below the requirements that the state requires, so that the closest residential area is not impacted by excessive noise. How you do that, I guess, is hire somebody to test it. I think that's very important. There is quite a distance there, so maybe the noise won't travel that far. I can tell you that the log chipping plant out there makes a terrible racket. 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. I don't know how the people out there put up with it, to tell you the truth. But in order to comply with that, we should have periodic testing of the noise levels at different times, particularly at night when people are trying to sleep. And I would say the semi-annual would probably be the best way to test, unless there's a rash of complaints about the noise and it's established that it is too noisy. But at least semi-annual testing to make sure that your noise levels fall within the state requirements for the closest residential area. Now, those people who live there, they know there's a residential area when they move there. So, you know, that's like moving next to the airport. So there's going to be a little noise. But we have to keep it as, you know, as low as it can be within the standards set by the state. Thank you.
I've never heard the log chipping plant out there. The only noise I can hear at all is the train.
You go talk to our budget director. He lives right across the street from it, and it starts at 6 a.m. in the morning, and it just goes completely wacko.
Well,
right
I live right off Mitz and Foss, so does he live further back?
I'm not. Well, he lives on the corner there, the farthest corner to the west.
Okay. Yeah, because I know
he's real close. He's only across the street and one building away from it. But that's not our concern. That's something else. But what I'm saying is that.
Okay.
What I already said.
Maybe I'm hard of hearing.
I don't think there's a requirement like that. But you know, if you think about it, with monitoring equipment today. I'm on the Marine board, and the Marine deputies run noise meters around to check. You know, so I mean, I would think almost, I don't know this, but a person could have something mounted to a computer anymore that just monitors and it goes into a hard drive. You know, I mean, literally, that's not what you want, but just having something that does decibel, at the Oregon Duck Games, they give you a decibel reading all the time. So, I mean, you know, this is not an expensive, complicated science. Oregon State, they don't do that because the decibels are lower, but. but it's a fairly easy device. It shouldn't put a burden on them, and I agree with you a couple times a year to know what it is.
Is that generally where the council wants to go with semi-annual testing?
For me, yes.
Semi-annual?
Mm-hmm.
My opinion would be annual unless there is a lot of complaint.
I agree with that. I think annually would be enough, and with the stipulation that testing could be triggered at any time by a complaint. Or a complaint, or two complaints, or whatever.
Doug, is that good for you, annual testing?
I would personally think that if it's so easy to get this 24-hour-7, that they could do it, I would think Viagreen would want to do it if it's inexpensive, because they could say, hey, this is what it is, all the time. We can show you right there. I'm not saying that we need to force them to do it, but I think that if I was in their shoes, I might want to.
Semi-annual, as far as I'm concerned. Twice a year, semi-annual. I think that's when that ought to be done. That's my opinion.
Barbara, I'm sticking with annual.
I'm still okay with annual.
It's fine. As long as there's a set time period.
I see a majority for annual.
That's fine.
Okay.
And then also...
Like you can be persuaded, Doug?
Huh?
You can be persuaded?
Well, I have no choice. I still think semi-annual is the best, but if the council wants to go with annual, then I'll go with that.
Okay. Is there anything else in that condition you would like to discuss? I think we've got a good way to manage sound. You've added an extra condition that assures there'll be regular testing.
Would we be getting too cumbersome if we have additional testing triggered by a certain amount of complaints?
I think what you're able to do under the conditional use permit provisions is that if there's a change or a complaint, then you have the right to investigate it and require them to be consistent with their permit approval. If you get a complaint, you need to act on it. And it will be brought to their attention, and then they'd be required to give information back to us, like an enforcement matter.
Oh, okay.
I have another, concern. The speed limit on those streets at 35, it seems excessive if they were to come down fast for any reason. Even for Reed, since there is a turn up there, would we be able to lower the speed limits?
We would have to pursue that outside of this process, because okay. There isn't a criterion that gives us the power to make them do it. Okay. And we're only responding to their application. The designation of a speed limit on a street is something separate that the council would have to deal with in a separate matter.
Okay.
May I bring up a question concerning truck traffic on Darlene?
Yes.
Is that appropriate?
Of course.
Okay. On page 70 under section D, where it says, Darlene, you would need a permit to use Darlene Way. Well over a year, possibly a year and a half ago, you committed to the council and in public forum that you would use Darlene for your truck traffic delivery to the plant off of Highway 31 for the majority of the truck trips, which would eliminate the majority of the trucks coming through 97 William Frost Reed Road. At that time, were you aware that there was a permit required to use Darlene?
No.
When did you become aware of that?
2 weeks ago. About 2 weeks ago, probably.
About a week ago. Understanding that BLM does not run at the normal speed of most anything faster than a snail, which is a true story, do you anticipate getting a problem with this?
Doug, I'm terribly sorry to interrupt, but as a matter of procedure, we can't ask the applicant questions because the public hearing has closed, and we don't have an opportunity to quiz them because it wouldn't be fair to the opponents and the appellant and the rest of the public. We can't engage at this point.
Okay.
But you can ask me a question about that.
Well, I'll ask you the same question I just asked him. Do you have an answer for that?
I do.
Okay.
I do. In this particular case, it was recently revealed that BLM requires a permit to use Darlene Way. That wasn't known earlier. So in order to use Darlene Way, they will have to get a permit. Until that time, they can't put their big trucks on there. And yes, BLM may be slow at times, but this is the proper procedure. Otherwise, we don't have the authority to say use it. They have to have a permit. Since we know about that information, we have to have this condition of approval. Otherwise, it would be like ignoring BLM.
Do you see a problem getting the permit in a timely fashion?
I don't know.
Well, it's a year and a half to build the plant, so you wouldn't have a truck for a long time.
But it's important to realize what happens to trips if you can't use Darlene Way. And the evidence in the record shows that the other roads are more than capable of handling it. So you have evidence in the record that considers what happens if Darlene Way is out of the picture. And the answer is that the roads operate fine if Darlene Way is not used. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's one of those silly protocol things we have to follow.
One of the big complaints we had about Darlene Way was the residents out there and the dust and so forth that would arise by using trucks on that road. Is there some way that we could stipulate in there that there be dust abatement on that road that would comply with BLM so that those residents could be placated on dust?
Yes. And I can add that in. So essentially we're saying that if a permit is obtained, that dust abatement for the use of Darlene Way is required.
I think that's reasonable.
Does that make sense?
Where on Darlene Way? That's a long road.
Well,
there's a big difference in cost.
They may not have to do it on the whole road.
You just say Darlene Way, so we'll need to know.
Where it would impact residential areas.
Yeah,
where
it would impact the residents living there.
Here's what I suggest. If you direct staff, which I'm recommending, to work on the findings and the final conditions of approval, and your direction is to approve this application with conditions of approval, I'll work on that. And I'll get a condition that's reasonable and sensible, because, you know, you can't dust abate the whole world, but we have to have something practical. And I'll put that in, if that is your direction to me.
Yeah, well, there are people who live there.
Yep.
And that, you know, and that is a dirt / gravel road. So,
yep,
part of it needs to be done.
Generally a pretty peaceful little used road. That kind of traffic would be definitely noticed by him.
So, how much of the road is something that I'll work on that.
Okay. What is the likelihood anyway in BLM even issuing a permit, do we know?
We don't know for sure. I mean, their processes have to be met. They do have a permitting process, so the record includes their dialogue saying, hey, you gotta get a permit. And it will take a while to get through their process. I don't have an answer on specifically how long or if it can be achieved. But what we do know is that if it can't be achieved, we have alternate routes that will be and can be used without exceeding the traffic capacities as shown in the traffic study.
Okay.
If we look at F, the smokestack and so forth, some of the woes that we had during our public comments, where they were worried about the effluent from there. Is there some way that that will be also monitored, just like the noise?
They must maintain their DEQ air quality permit, and that's managed by the state of Oregon.
Okay, so the state does the monitoring.
I believe so. In no event can they exceed their permit requirements.
Okay.
In A, where it says any substantial change to the proposal will require a new permit, how is a substantial change determined? Who determines what is a substantial change and when?
Two ways. One, they submit a modification to us or a new permit for a new application, some major change on the site. Or, if we see an operational aspect that we believe is not consistent with the conditional use permit, we'll do code enforcement.
Okay.
Do you have anything else about it?
I don't.
Doug?
No, thank you.
So, Madam Mayor, at this point, you have some choices to make as the council on how you'd like to proceed. Approval, approval with conditions, or denial. You need to let me know what direction you want to go so that I can prepare findings to support your decision.
Are you clear on the additional conditions that we came up?
I am. Okay.
Did you have anything else, Don?
No, none. I think everything has been very well answered for my vote.
Council, any other discussion?
I have none.
So it looks like we're headed for approval with conditions.
Okay, you would need to vote on that. I'd also recommend that if you do recommend that staff proceed with conditions of approval as you've described and findings to support that, that you direct the mayor through your processes to sign the approval with conditions by the end of the month. And the reason I'm asking for that is because the bulk of the work, in fact all of the work, has been for you as this body. And getting this done before the end of the year is a practical way to proceed with all the work that you've done and come to a conclusion while this council is in effect. I would also ask that you take a final look at the record behind me, which consists of many of the things you've seen in the hearings and things that have been submitted to you in writing and emails. So I will leave that here at the city because the record is now ours. Okay. And that concludes my report.
Okay. So, council comfortable with that?
Yes.
To proceed? So, the motion we're going to be looking for is a motion to proceed with conditions of approval as described and giving mayor authority to...
To sign the final approval.
To sign the final approval.
And that will be sent to the applicant and the parties.
And that will be sent to the applicant and the parties. Did you get that, Patty?
Mm-hmm.
That is the motion. Do you want me to restate it?
No.
Do you want it restated?
No.
Okay. So, I will entertain such a motion.
I so move.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Brenner, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Council. Good job.
Okay, so what will happen at this point is I will email to all of you the final findings and the conditions of approval with a signature line for the mayor, and we'll get that baby out before the end of the month.
What did you say?
You can do that in 2 days?
Well, we've had a lot of data so far, and I think we have to.
Yes, you will.
You guys, our consultants and county staff, Liz, and everyone has done a great job of putting all this together, walking us through this, keeping it all coherent and easy to understand. You, I think, laid it out again. Everything that I heard tonight was, you know, consistent in what we heard and experienced all along, and we thank him. I think you did a great job, all of you. Thank you.
She reads our minds.
I think we owe thanks to Biogrand too, because I think they have been exceedingly cooperative with the city and the planning department in trying to get this through, and it appears to me from all of this that we've received that they want to be a good neighbor, and I think that's important to us. Thank you.
I agree. I think we've seen that. So, we have nothing else?
We're adjourned. Chris, are you still there?
I'm here.
All right. I didn't want you to feel left out. Thank you for your hard work, too.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned at 6:56 p.m.